It seems like everybody is talking about blood sugar, but should you care? If you don't have diabetes, does it matter for your life and your health? Let's talk about it. It's true. Blood sugar is kind of the health topic du jour, du moment. And I mean, alongside gut health, the conversation around glucose and blood sugar and insulin has really started to pick up, and with good reason. 80% of healthy individuals experience glucose spikes into the pre-diabetic range from common breakfast foods, from common lunch foods, from common dinner foods, from just living their life as they see as normal. And the thing about blood sugar and glucose is that it affects every single system in our body, our fertility, our mood, our gut health, our skin, aging. So there's a thing called glycation, and glycation is the process by which we age. It's essentially, this sounds weird, but it's essentially like your body cooking itself. And that is the process of aging. It's normal, but we speed up glycation by having consistent glucose problems, whether it's a spike, whether it's a dip, whether it's a spike and then a dip. This is all leading to more glycation and therefore quicker aging. So wrinkles, arthritis, your body just feeling like, God damn, I'm old. But on the other side of the coin, if you are being mindful of managing your glucose spikes, you have a flat glucose curve, meaning you don't get a ton of spikes, you don't get a ton of dips. It's kind of just like a nice, beautiful line, an even line. Then you slow the glycation process. So, the control that we have in aging, in fertility, in skin, I think for a lot of years, people just thought, well, that's just what happens in life. You just get older. You know, some people are fertile, some people aren't. Some people have bad skin, some people don't. But what we're starting to understand now is that glucose, blood sugar, insulin, and their response, and also the trickle-down effect that happens when those are dysregulated, really is one of the biggest influential factors that we have on all of those things in our life. And we're going to talk about today how you can hack your blood sugar, hack your glucose for health. And I do want to say before I get into the hacks is that all of these exist outside of any special diet. Like, I'm never going to tell you that you have to give up meat, that you have to give up gluten, that you have to give up dairy, that you have to give up alcohol, because I would never want to give up any of those things. I love them too much. Instead, my hope with this episode is to show you how you still do those things that influence just like your joie de vivre in a positive way so that you can still live your life and also be in pursuit of health at the same time. I truly believe both can exist. Now, the first tip that I'm going to give you, and when I tell you I take so much heat for this, it's wild. But the first tip is to eat breakfast and to make it savory. Now, I take a ton of heat for saying eat breakfast because the intermittent fasting community, they are very loud, they are very proud, and they absolutely want you to know it. I have been called an idiot, a stupid idiot, a quack, a dummy, a stupid bitch, like you name it on TikTok for saying that if you have blood sugar problems, if you have hormonal issues, intermittent fasting can actually be making you worse. Now, the research on intermittent fasting was done on men and postmenopausal women. And so if you are someone that is dealing with super heavy, painful periods, you spot in between your periods, you just have like overall period and menstrual cycle malaise, I would challenge you to stop intermittent fasting if that is something that you are doing to find relief. And here's the thing, you know, everyone is talking about intermittent fasting the same way that everyone's talking about glucose and everyone's talking about gut health. Intermittent fasting has been the prescription for so many things for so many people. But there's a lot of people that are doing intermittent fasting that are like, why do I still feel like hell? Why are my symptoms worsening? Why is my hair falling out? Why am I waking up in the middle of the night consistently? Why is my period worse? And the reason is that intermittent fasting is not for you. And here's the thing. When you don't eat breakfast, so say you wake up and you're hungry, your body's like, yo, put a morsel of food in me, please, and you don't have that morsel of food, what happens is your body goes into a stress response because it's like, I need to eat and I can't eat. And so your body releases cortisol. Once cortisol is in the conversation and in a negative way, we have cortisol released when we wake up in the morning because it's what gets us up. It's what wakes us up. But if you have an overproduction of cortisol because there is a stress response in the body, what happens is it's a ripple effect onto all of our other hormones. Cortisol is a hormone. Insulin is also a hormone. And when you think about the stress response in our body, all of that, you know, it's for a higher good. It's meant to help you fight for your life or run for it. But if the stress is not real, if it's simply because you do not eat and the spiral effect that's going to happen to your reproductive hormones, then you will start to worsen. Your symptoms will get worse. They will not get better. And while I'm sure there's some of you listening, some of people out there that are like, well, intermittent fasting works for me. Great. I'm happy for you, but there's a lot of people that it doesn't work for. And I also just want to mention that a lot of people, when they come to me with vitriol, they say, well, I lost 100 pounds intermittent fasting. And here's what I'll say about that. Weight loss is not necessarily a benchmark of a successful health endeavor. You can do a lot of really bad things to your body, really terrible, terrible things that make you lose weight. It doesn't mean that you have achieved health by any regard. It simply means that you lost weight. And there's a lot of dastardly things that we can do that helps us lose weight, but it can cause hormonal problems. It can make everything that's going on in our body worse. This might not be the case for you, but this is a case for a lot of people. So with that long, long, long-winded introduction to that, I say eat breakfast. And most importantly, make it savory. So it's not just enough to eat breakfast. You're like, yo, I ate breakfast. I had a bowl of cereal. I had some orange juice. Are you happy, Bianca? Unfortunately, I'm not happy. Because you need to set the tone for your blood sugar for the day. So if you start on a sweet note, you will be in a cravings loop. You will be craving things. You'll be wanting another coffee. You'll be reaching for, you know, a sweet thing mid-morning. You'll make a bad decision at lunch, and then that will have you reaching for sweet things or another coffee mid-afternoon. And then dinner, it'll be something you're scrambling for because you're ravenous and you're craving. And then you'll have a bad sleep that night, and the cycle just continues to go forward like that. If you start your day with something savory, so you have, you know, eggs, bacon, avocado toast, a chia seed pudding, which while tastes sweet, behaves savory-like in the body, what's going to happen is that you're going to have even glucose and insulin levels, which means even energy, which means no cravings, which means you make better decisions. Because once your craving and hunger hormone ghrelin is activated, your ability to just make decisions in any regard is impaired. And that means decisions in what you're going to eat. And the impairment from the perspective of what you're going to eat is like, if your energy is flagging, your body naturally is like, give me more energy. So it's like, give me a carb, give me something sugary, give me candy, give me another coffee. And it only proliferates the cycle. So instead, starting with something savory means that yes, you can still have sweet things. I mean, if you want it, if you genuinely want it, have it. But it also means that you will not be at the mercy. You will not be a prisoner to this craving cycle simply because you decided to have breakfast. And again, there are a lot of people for whom intermittent fasting has helped their insulin levels. It has helped their glucose. And for those people, I mean, congratulations, because intermittent fasting is incredibly effective at a lot of things. But if it isn't working for you and you are just doggedly sticking to it because someone said, this is what you do to help with your blood sugar or your period, your PCOS or whatever the case is, I would challenge you to pull back on it and start to make different decisions about how you are nourishing yourself in regards to the times with which you are nourishing yourself. Now, since we're on the topic of breakfast, we're just going to stay there. And my second tip is always have food before coffee. Look, I love coffee. I'm the type of person that falls asleep at night and I think, oh my God, it's only a few hours until I get to have coffee because I love coffee so much. And when I was healing my full body eczema breakout, getting control of my gut health, my glucose, the whole nine, I gave up coffee for almost a full calendar year. And the thing about it was I just thought that there was no place for coffee in my life while also, again, being in pursuit of like my healthiest and highest self. It wasn't until I realized that it's not the coffee that's the problem. It was the way that I was doing it that was the problem. And when I made that shift, I was like, well, hell, goodbye Dandy Blend, goodbye mushroom coffee, hello coffee. And while, I mean, there's so many great options out there and, you know, that are non-caffeinated and such, I am a coffee lover. I don't want decaf. I want the real thing. And so instead of giving up coffee, I would urge you to have food before you have coffee. So caffeine makes muscles less efficient at soaking up glucose. And the thing about our muscles is our muscles are one of our most efficient glucose detox pathways. Meaning when we use our muscles, our body uses the glucose so that it doesn't float around in our system. And caffeine also raises stress hormones like adrenaline, which can increase glucose levels. So you see how there starts to become a bit of a problem. You know, your body is less efficient at soaking up glucose, but the stress hormones that caffeine can sort of induce are increasing our glucose levels. So it's like, oh no, what do we do? And caffeine also makes it harder for the body to get rid of excess glucose. So it's kind of three things at play. But that doesn't mean that you don't have coffee. I mean, I have coffee every single morning. And if I'm going out at night for like a late one, I will have a coffee, you know, mid-afternoon because I want the energy. I want it. But the thing is that all of those things that I just mentioned, being less effective at dealing with glucose, releasing or increasing our glucose levels, all of those things can be combated if we just have food before coffee. Here's why. When we have a meal that, again, isn't super sugary, something savory, something balanced, you got like your fiber, your protein, your fat. The fiber in vegetables coats our digestive lining and therefore makes the glucose response from the coffee slower. The reaction is slower in our body. And also when we have protein and fat, it further reduces that transit time or further increases that transit time, therefore making the glucose release slower into our system. And so you can still have coffee, you just have to eat before. And if you are a person that was, you know, really accustomed to having coffee and waiting and then having food, because maybe that's what the intermittent fasting community told you to do, I'm going to challenge you to do something different. And so just have food before you have coffee. But also, if you have a meal and you're having a meal that's already super, super high in sugar, maybe it's like a pasta, there's a dessert, and maybe they're like, oh, hey, have an espresso or something. I would probably say no to the espresso simply because the meal already has so much glucose going on. That being said, if you're like, I still want the coffee, have it after food. Always food before coffee. And it can be hard, especially for those of us that have been, you know, intermittent fasting for a considerable amount of time. There is a period where your body isn't hungry in the morning. You will wake up and you're like, well, I just don't want to eat. I just don't have it in me to eat. And you just have to force yourself. You really do. Your body will get accustomed to having something in the morning, and it will also become accustomed to having something before coffee. So it'll get to a point then when you switch it up and you really notice, like if you have coffee before food, you'll be like, oh, I feel different. I also just want to mention something about decaf coffee is that decaf coffee is incredibly laden with like chemicals. Decaffeinating coffee is a chemical process, unless the process is Swiss water decaf, like process, Swiss water process, I think it's called. And so again, when we think about our glucose and our liver health, glucose and liver health are very much interrelated. As our blood sugar is regulated by use of muscles, because it's one of our most important glucose detox pathways, our liver is another big one. And so, you know, making sure that our liver health is boosted and making sure that we are doing things that is good for both our gut and our glucose is going to go a really long way. Now, I think I might have just gotten off topic, but I'm gonna get back on topic. The third tip is a veggie starter. And I said before, the vegetables, the fiber and vegetable coats the small intestine and slows gastric emptying, which then again mitigates that glucose spike that can be a result of the food that we eat. Glucose from the meal is absorbed at a lesser and smaller extent, which means a smaller glucose spike. And this is amazing because this means that you can have coffee. It means that you have a croissant. It means that you can have a bowl of pasta. It means that you can have dessert. Really, if you are committed to having a vegetable starter, it sort of opens up the world of like, oh, I can eat all the things I love. I just have to do a few things before. And the thing about it is people are like, what does it mean to even have a smaller glucose spike? Like what, how will I know the glucose spike is smaller? Well, there are some things that you'll feel in your body. You won't feel tired after eating. You won't feel irritable. You will feel like you're able to get to your next meal without being like ravenous and like, oh my God, I want to die. But also you'll have better hormonal balance. Your periods will be better. And not just the bleed, but the whole menstrual cycle. You won't get cramps in between your period. You won't get spotting. You'll ovulate healthily. You'll have a nice, long, beautiful luteal phase. Improved fertility. Because when you aren't affecting insulin, which is a hormone, and therefore it induces cortisol. If you aren't bringing those two into the conversation negatively, then reproductive hormones are much happier and therefore improved fertility and fertile function. Fewer cravings. You'll notice that one almost right away. You won't crave things in from, you know, if you eat something now, you won't crave something in between your next meal. Better skin, fewer wrinkles. Your skin will just glow. And that's something that people say to me all the time, oh my God, your skin looks great. Your skin looks great. Like, what do you use on your skin? I literally use like very affordable, not a ton of products. Like I use niacinamide, which is an antioxidant for like, it's like a serum. I use collagen and then I use rosehip oil. And then I just wash my face with like an oil water blend. That's it. I don't do, you know, a ton of serums. I don't do like expensive creams because that's not where good skin comes from. Good skin comes from having really good gut health, having balanced glucose, having, you know, really good transit time. So there isn't any excesses sticking around your system because you aren't having, you know, consistent bowel movements. So if you're someone who has like a cabinet just full of every single anti-wrinkle cream and you're still seeing wrinkles, it's time to look inside. You cannot fix the outward representation of what's going on inside. And that's really what skin is. It's really just like clear skin is usually a sign of like good things going on inside. Also reduced inflammation. And as someone who comes from, you know, the eczema world, people with psoriasis, endometriosis, anything that rheumatoid arthritis, anything that is inflammatory in nature, if you are minimizing your glucose spikes or eliminating them completely, I mean, good on you, you will find that you experience benefits in those areas. For me, every time I would eat something, I would get so itchy. It was like my eczema was just like, and I thought I had like a ton of food allergies. In fact, it was just my glucose response combined with really bad gut health that was leading to these inflammatory, like itchy patches where literally covering me from my like neck to my ankles. Once I got control of my gut health, which is a little bit of a longer path, but still one that's very much worth going on. And once I also started working on my glucose, so how my body is reacting to the food that I eat every single day, that was when I noticed less inflammatory reactions to my eczema, and now my eczema is completely gone. Slower aging. Again, this isn't one thing that you can say like, oh my God, for yesterday from today, like I age slower, but you will notice that over time. Someone who takes care of their glucose and is mindful of glucose and hormones, insulin, cortisol, the whole nine, they age differently. They age slower because they aren't sort of kicking off glycation with every single meal that they eat. And lastly, the reduced risk of disease. So many diseases are, you know, fed in our body by inflammation and they're fed by some other things. And when we manage our glucose response, we eliminate the ability for some of these things to truly just take root and proliferate in our body. And that's just facts. And it's, you know, risk of disease can be something as small as like getting a cold, getting flus to, you know, even greater than that, you know, staying safe from something like Alzheimer's. My grandma had Alzheimer's and she passed away from it. And it was honestly one of the worst, hardest, most gut-wrenching, I mean, I could cry about it now, situations because it didn't need to happen. And the one of the reasons that I'm so focused on this lifestyle and living this lifestyle and sharing with my family and my friends is because I never want to have to go through that experience of losing someone to that disease again. And they call Alzheimer's diabetes of the brain because of what happens with our considerable glucose responses in our lives to our brain. And so if you can prevent yourself and if you can keep yourself and your family safe from something like Alzheimer's, oh my God, all this work is worth it. And that is really, again, one of my raison d'êtres for being an educator around glucose and blood sugar because of what it's done for my life, but also in a positive way, but also what's happened in my life and my experience negatively. So that's just something to think about. My next tip is really, again, underscoring the fact that the things that I teach in the Glucose Glow Up community, the things that I teach all throughout all of my teachings really are about living your life still and eating the things that you love and still being able to enjoy that like food part of your life while also still being in pursuit of health because both can exist. So you really want to find recipes that fall in line with your goals, with what you want, but you also want to eat them in the right way. And so when I say that, I mean, you want to find recipes that for 80% of the time, like I'm an 80-20 kind of gal. Like the 20%, I really bang it out. Like I live in that 20%. But 80% of the time, I am being mindful of my glucose, my gut health, you know, my sleep, all of that. And when I say you need to find recipes that fall in line, that 80% of the time, you need to find recipes and things and foods that are going to still taste delicious, still satisfy you from a flavor perspective, but are going to help you get you to your goals as far as blood sugar, glucose, or any of, you know, the reasons that you want to manage that are concerned. And so some of the things that you can do as far as eating those foods in the right way is to chew properly. Oftentimes, I mean, it's like I have a hard time chewing properly just because I eat really fast. So I will pick my fork up, put it down, chew the food in between bites. That's the vibe that I have to cultivate simply because like I love to eat food. And I love to eat it fast, but you should chew every bite about 20 times and it should be indiscernible. So like if it's, there's like peas and rice and chicken, you should not be able to tell what's peas, what's rice, what's chicken before you swallow. That's like a easy way to think about like, did I chew it properly? The next is to eat your sweets, eat the dessert, eat the sweet stuff at the end of your meals. Like I said before, you want to have protein, you want to have fiber, you want to have healthy fats, and then you want to have sweets. And I also categorize carbs and sweets differently. So you want to have your fat, your fiber, your protein, then your carb, then your sweet. And so if your carb is the only, you know, sort of like sugary thing or carby thing in the meal, yeah, you have that last. But then if you're having dessert, you have that after you have the carb. You want to have like the meal, like the savory stuff before you have anything sweet. Because again, that coating of the gut lining, that slow release, that slow gastric emptying, that is all something that we want to achieve with eating sweets at the end. Because once you introduce the sweets, everything's already shored up. Now, you want to find food and recipes that hack the rules. And so, you know, one of the sponsors of this podcast is the Glucose Glow Up community, which is my community. And in that community, I share so many recipes that are delicious, but that also uphold the hacks and the ethos of blood sugar balance, because that's very important. It's also important to approach this from a perspective of like, I could still live my life. I could still do the things that I want to do. I can still eat the things that I want to eat. I just have to do it differently, which is different than the approach that a lot of people take because, you know, if someone is diagnosed with PCOS or insulin resistance or this, that, or the other thing, you know, everyone's saying like, give this up, give this up, give this up. Instead, you should be thinking, okay, all of these things that I have in my life that I love, that bring me joy for whatever reason, as far as food is concerned, and look at them as categories. Is this sweet? Is this savory? Is this helping me? Is this hindering me? And not in to the end of getting rid of it, but to the end of understanding how you do that thing while also still being in pursuit of health. And that's sort of what I teach you in the Glucose Glow Up community, but you could check it out on your own time. But you also just want to make sure that you aren't just like, I'm going to give up everything, because that's not sustainable. That's not life. If you are in the business of balancing your glucose for whatever intent, I'm here to tell you that you can do it while also still living your life. The Glow Up Tips for the Girls podcast is brought to you by the Glucose Glow Up, the community for those who want to reverse insulin resistance and heal their PCOS naturally. Join now for access to 3 video workshops, monthly live events, and more being added every single month, over 35 recipes to help you balance your blood sugar naturally. Head to theglucoseglowup.com and glow up your glucose to glow up your life. Again, I might take some heat for what I'm about to say next from the intermittent fasting community, but I mean, I'm in for a penny, I'm in for a pound. So I think that if you are consistently waking up in the middle of the night to pee between like 2 and like 4:30, that is unlikely your bladder. It is probably your blood sugar. And here's why I say that. Because in the night, if your glucose dips and you have a low glucose event or you have a high glucose event, what happens is cortisol is then released. And we've talked about cortisol before. It's the wake-up hormone. It wakes your body up out of sleep. Now, if you didn't have that cortisol response, you would have slept through because your body wouldn't have had those wake-up hormones to say, hey, wake up. But because you had that low or high glucose event and cortisol was released, now your body starts to wake up and give you all the signals of morning time, like having to pee. So if you have a snack or something before bed that helps to moderate and balance your glucose while you sleep so you don't have a dip or a spike, then you sleep all the way through. Yeah, sure, you might wake up having to piss your pants, but you slept all the way through and had restful sleep. And so I was always like, I mean, there wasn't a time where I didn't wake up in the night to pee, and I always just thought I have a small bladder. I walked around for a good, over 30 years of my life thinking that my bladder was just small. I have small hands. I figured I have a small bladder too. It turns out it was my glucose. And so this is important because if we are having bad sleep, we aren't getting good, solid rest, our glucose is going to be harder to manage in the day, regardless of what hacks you implement, if you eat the veggies first, all of that. It works less effectively if you are tired or if you are stressed. And so good sleep is really, really important. And so having a snack before bed is going to help you stay asleep. It's going to help you be more rested. It's going to help with your blood sugar balance throughout the daytime and awake hours. Now, the snack that you have matters because it can't just be, you know, Cap'n Crunch, Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I only mentioned those because those are elite sugary cereals, but I mean, I have those with care. But you want to have something that has a little bit of fat, a little bit of protein, and isn't too voluminous. So like sometimes I'll just have like 2 Brazil nuts, and that's fine. Sometimes I'll have like a tiny bowl of yogurt with like some chia seeds and maybe like a few berries. That works as well. Hummus with some seed crackers. That works phenomenally. Sometimes just a piece of cheese. It really truly depends on what, you know, works for you and what you want and what settles with your stomach. Like if you can't have dairy because you're lactose intolerant, you probably wouldn't have yogurt or cheese. You probably have seed crackers and maybe hummus. If you have a problem with like something like diverticulitis or you have a stomach issue, you might not want to have seed crackers and hummus because it might be tough on you. You might want to just have some bone broth and a couple of nuts. Regardless, you want that snack to have fat, protein, a little bit of fiber, because that is what is going to hold your glucose overnight. And this is important. We want our glucose held. Now, like I said, I take maximum amounts of heat for this. I've been called all kinds of names on TikTok because I have said intermittent fasting can be worse for you, because think about it. And I get the comment a lot, oh, it's just because I drink a lot of water in the night. Oh, it's because I drink a lot of water before bed. It's like I drink the equivalent of about like 12 ounces of water before I go to bed with my supplements that I take at night. And I don't wake up in the night. And so generally, it's not the water you're drinking. It has something to do with your glucose. Our bodies are meant to stay asleep unless it gets the signal to wake up. And the signal to wake up isn't your bladder. The signal to wake up is the cortisol release from that glucose response, which makes your body think it's morning when it's not. And so having a snack before bed means that you circuit break that issue and you get in front of it so that you sleep through. Yes, you might wake up to pee. Like when I wake up in the morning from that 12 ounces of water I drink before bed, I have to pee like as soon as I wake up. But that's not really a problem for me because I slept all the way through. So having a snack before bed will change your life, certainly if you are accustomed to always having disrupted sleep. Because I know for myself, I relied on things like melatonin. I would smoke weed before bed. Like I would take an edible. Like I tried so many things just to like stay asleep. And as soon as, and none of them worked. And as soon as I started having a snack before bed, it was like a miracle. It was magic. I was sleeping through the night. And so if this is you, this is one of the areas that you need to work on as far as your glucose is concerned. I will also say, just as a caveat emptor, that it could be something else. But having a snack before bed is one of the easiest ways to rule out glucose. So if you are consistently still waking up in the middle of the night, you are having a really good snack before bed, and you're still waking up in the middle of the night, that is a good opportunity to go to your doctor or your naturopath, whoever is your healthcare provider, and say, this is what's going on in my body. I can't sleep through the night. Maybe they'll run some blood tests and you can get some answers. But why not rule out glucose first? This episode of the Glow Up Tips for the Girls podcast is brought to you by NutriSense, the continuous glucose monitor. Wearing a continuous glucose monitor honestly was a game changer for me because I was able to see what was happening with my glucose in real time, all the time, continuously. But what was even more game changing was when I got my continuous glucose monitor with NutriSense, I was also assigned a dietitian to help me read and interpret the numbers that were coming up. Because when you get a continuous glucose monitor, it can be hard to interpret what the numbers are saying. But when you get a dietitian paired with your monitor, that is when you can really understand, interpret, and make the right changes guided by a professional. So head over to NutriSense.io to get your continuous glucose monitor and use the code Bianca25 for $25 off your first month. Trust me when I tell you, this will change your life. Get one now. Managing and monitoring glucose is not just for diabetics. And having grown up, like I grew up in a culture and a community where everyone had diabetes if they were older. So I kind of just thought it was normal, but it's not. But also, that being said, people who are diabetic are not the only ones who would benefit from monitoring, managing, and flattening their glucose curves. And I hope that with this episode, you've seen that it really isn't about giving up things. It isn't about changing your life drastically. It's just about making a few tweaks while still being able to enjoy the food that you love, enjoy your lifestyle, while also still being in pursuit of health. Both can exist. So I hope that you found this useful because I know that blood sugar balance and management has changed my life. It's also changed my career, but seeing its power and seeing how it can transform how someone feels in their body means that everyone should be paying attention to their glucose. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Glow Up Tips for the Girls podcast. If you like this podcast, and I really hope you do, please leave me a rating, a review, subscribe, share. Open your window and just scream out, listen to this podcast. And if you have any feedback for me, please join me on Instagram at bianca.osborne and you can give it to me there. The good, the bad, the ugly, I welcome it all. From my lips to your ears, shine on. See you next time.